Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 617, recorded Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. It's pronounced Xbox One Charday. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. From the founders of Carbonite comes the cloud storage technology that's disrupting the industry. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click free trial, and use the offer code Windows. And by Thinkst Canary. Detect attackers on your network with honeypots that can be deployed in minutes. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workplace experience. With Envoy visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get together with two of the top, if not the top, journalists in the Microsoft space to talk about all about Microsoft. Mr. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com. Ms. Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Hello, you two. I'm sorry I wasn't here last week. I was busy eating Lappert's ice cream and lying on the beach.
Darn.
You look like you're doing okay for yourself.
I had a good time. In Kauai. But I understand that it was a very busy week last week. Sorry I missed the fireworks. Thanks, Megan, for filling in. I did bring a Windows laptop to Hawaii with me, so I was able to try the new Credge.
Oh, nice.
And it's quite nice. Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Talk about that a bit more today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think, is today going to be as full jam-packed as last week? Or
no.
No.
No, but we still have quite a few good things.
There's some good stuff in there, though.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Good stuff's always welcome. Mm-hmm. Shall we begin with the Surface Hub 2S?
Yes.
Is that like Windows
S? I just got back from the launch.
Oh, you were there.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a weird little event, I have to say. we went to Steelcase in Columbus Circle for this. There were like 30 people total in the audience from the press.
Nice.
Panos was there doing his thing. But the first like 20, 25 minutes of this thing, which was not live streamed at all, by the way, was all about office furniture. I'm not making this up. It was like the Steelcase people talking about office furniture.
This was that Steelcase event. That's right.
Right. Well, so we were all just kind of sitting there like,
why are we here?
They're talking about like privacy screens you can put up in your office and like folding desks. And mm-hmm. I was like, wow, huh?
I'm so glad I didn't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and come to this.
But then Panos took the stage and got pumped. He was actually, Paul was like, he looks kind of subdued. He was a little more subdued than usual, but still, you know, he revved up as he got into talking about the flow and people's creative process and blah, 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 his favorite topics. But they did show the 2S.
Did the subject of basketballs come up at all?
But no basketball stories or any other kinds of stories like that. So that was good. Okay. We saw a concept video that they like to do, you know, showing how all the component pieces pull out of the Surface Hub 2 and then how they all flow back in. So we could see that. But then there were some Surface Hub 2 devices, 2S devices there that we get to try out. And they talked about a few things I hadn't talked about before. One is availability. So the 2S, which is the version that runs the current Surface Hub 1 software and new hardware, will start shipping to U.S. customers in June. They didn't give us an exact date in June, but June. The pricing is $9,000 to start for the 50-inch
model. How does that compare to the entry-level Surface Hub 1 pricing? Do you remember?
So, yes, I do. In fact, I looked it up.
It's higher, isn't it?
Yeah. It's higher. 55-inch Surface Hub 1 was $7,000.
Okay.
Yep. So the new one is starts at 9, goes up to about 12, depending on which accessories and software options that you add. And also what kind of stands you have. That's why Steelcase was there. They have these rolling, I don't know what you would call them, like carts like, almost that
like,
you can put the Surface
Hub 2
They almost
look like tripods, right? They kind of...
Yeah. Yep. And they even showed... Yeah. They showed a battery for the Surface Hub 2, which we had not heard existed before. And that's another option. So there's a battery that can sit inside of that cart on the bottom, and you can disconnect the Surface Hub 2S from a power supply for about 2 hours and have it run on battery, which is kind of interesting because sometimes, sometimes you're in a meeting and there might not be a plug, right? Like you're in the hallway because there's no conference room available or something.
Maybe go outside. It's nice out.
Go outside. Yeah, that'd be great. So it runs between $9,000 and $12,000, depending on what kind of accessories you put with the device. Otherwise, it was what we expected for the most part. You cannot really use this in portrait mode. It's basically landscape mode only.
Yes, because it's based on the original software. Right, of course.
Right. And there's actually... a physical, like, pin almost that's inside of the cartridge that's going to come with it to prevent you from turning it.
So the cartridge for the X version will allow it to rotate.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Dynamically rotate. But if you wanted to, you could pull the cartridge out and set it up in portrait mode and then put the cartridge back in. So there's a way to do it that's not very smooth, but you can do it. It's physically possible to do it. You can't tile them together yet in a row, like daisy chain them. That's another 2X
feature. Because again, the old software.
Yeah, because of the new software. So there's 2S, which is the one coming out now, 2X coming out in 2020 at some point. And then there was a new 85-inch version of the Surface 2S. I wasn't that surprised by that because if you remember, Surface Hub 1 had an 84-inch version. That, the book, though, that 85. Sorry,
$20,000. I think for the is that the right price?
It was.
I know they didn't say
20,
for the new version. Yep. I mean, for the original one.
Yep, original one was $20,000. They didn't give a price for the new one. They also said the new one won't even go to testers until 2020. The 85-inch.
By the way, do you think that has any impact on the 2X timeframe? Because the way this was presented, right, last September, I think it was mm-hmm. I think. Most people expected to see 2X fairly quickly after 2S, but that to me says 18 months from now.
Yep.
Something like that.
I asked.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And they said, we said 2020. I said, but is it still 2020?
December 2020 is still 2020.
Yeah.
And by the way, they'll probably ship it in preview too. That's the other thing,
right? I would not be surprised to see 2X go further back. I don't know if it'll go so far as to 2021, but it'll definitely be later in the year, I bet.
Yeah, I bet it does for broad availability.
Yep. So I got to try it. I got to draw on it. I wrote on it, did some adjustments with text. It's a very smooth experience writing on this thing. Really nice.
Does it use the giant magic marker style pen?
Use the giant magic marker. And they have this feature they hadn't told us before about called the magic wand, which lets you take a photo and turn it into a line drawing and then have it saved in the cloud somewhere. And so that you're going to be able to save all these kinds of attachments, drawings, anything you want on the Surface Hub device and be able to search it at some point, which will be really great. I'm trying to think what else they showed us. Yeah, so they didn't, at the event itself, they never mentioned the 2X, which was interesting. Like, they never even brought it up. They only talked about the 2S. They talked about how they're going to take the compute engine out of the 2S and make it a display only for purchase. So a display with no compute. It's going to look exactly like the 50-inch.
That's still going to be expensive. They didn't say, but I can't imagine that the compute module is worth, $2,000 maybe?
I know, right.
I mean, we're still talking $8,000.
No, I know. That's my guess too. And so it's not meant to be just like a regular display you'd put on your desk. It's more, if you want to use it as a collaboration device, but you don't need the compute, like kind of alongside your Surface Book or your Surface Hub or whatever, just have another monitor. You can use the same cameras that are with the Surface Hub 2S. You can use the same pens.
Did they talk about their cameras at all?
They showed the cameras and the cameras were there, but they didn't bring them up and talk about them other than to say they're 4K cameras.
Okay. And they were kind of stuck into the top of the monitor or whatever.
But you can take them off.
And I think they're just USB. Yeah, you can move them around.
Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. But they didn't call them out or talk about them as a separate peripheral, which obviously they are, right? So they're going to have the Surface display. And then they have this very interesting option of allowing customers who want to do this, take the operating system off. So the current operating system is this thing called Windows 10 Teams that's customized for the Surface Hub 1 and now for the 2S. You're going to be able to take that off and load plain old Windows 10 Pro or Enterprise on your Surface Hub 2S if you want to. Who is this for? It's for people who can't use UWP apps and who need a custom 132 app running on their Surface Hub. So they're going to let you do that. I don't know what they're going to charge, if anything, to do that. It seems almost like a separate configuration. I don't know if it'll be available to everyone or how they'll price that.
So that's just a Windows 10 PC at that point. It's not a collaboration solution. Okay.
Right. It's like a big screen, multi-touch Windows 10 PC that doesn't have all the built-in, you know, one-touch meeting and all those kinds of things as part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But they said some customers want that, so they're going to make that available too. Again, no word on how, when, what pricing. It's just another configuration of Surface Hub 2S, basically.
You know, for people who probably don't remember this, they announced Surface Hub 2 at Build last year. And at that time, it was a new system. It was the rotating screen. There was only one size screen. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what they were probably very vague on the timing. I think what they said at the time was, you'll learn more about this in September, that kind of thing. And when September came, they said, actually, we're going to have two different versions. And one's going to run the existing software because our customers told us they wanted that. And then we're going to have this 2X version that will be the real thing that we were talking about back in April, and that will come later. But, you know, it's funny, like as this thing keeps getting pushed back, you know, the real Surface Hub 2, if you will, it almost reminds me a little bit of HoloLens, you know, in that there's this dream of what it can become. And then the reality of what they ship is, you know, first is not necessarily the greatest thing in the world. It's not the promise, but it seems like they're going to get it there. Like HoloLens 2, I think they finally have risen to the level of certainly my expectations for this product. I mean, with regards to the field of view and so forth. And the natural interactions you can have. And so I don't know if it's a big deal that it's delayed too much. I think the issue I have, though, is just the way the messaging was handled. Because, you know, when they first announced this, there was no, there were no other things. And they tried to massage it a bit in September, like this was all according to plan. But I think they're kind of scrambling a little bit to, you know, deal with the reality.
Yeah. You know, remember when they first announced Surface Hub 2, they showed it like as a single thing with multiple portrait mode devices daisy chained together. Yeah. We only found out that that wasn't going to be possible until the 2X last fall. Like we didn't know that they had pushed that series
and
of features
like
back.
It seemed like those three displays were sort of their replacement for the 84-inch version or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
That if you want the big one, you get three of the small ones now instead of buying them separately because, you know, obviously the additional functionality you get there with being able to rotate them and so forth is so cool. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But now today they say there is going to be an 85-inch single pane also.
I bet they don't do that for the 2X though because, well, I guess they still do. But obviously you're not going to rotate that thing. They could.
No.
They absolutely could.
You would never rotate that. Think about
like
rotating 85-inch you know? Device. Yeah. Like, how would you even do it? No, you can't. You can't rotate that.
It would be floor to ceiling, you know.
It would. Yeah. And then we spent like the rest of the event trying to talk Panos into giving us review units that we would take home on the subway, but we didn't get him to buy in on that.
No luck.
The last thing he said to me was, "I'll send you one." And I'm like, "All right, I'm holding you to that."
What are you going to do with it?
I know. Where am I going to put it, right?
You don't even have a TV, but you're going to have, oh, I have a service
in behind her. It'll be like a thin sliver of the screen.
Actually, it'd be great for the show. You could do, we'll start doing chalk talks.
Exactly.
Mary Jo.
Little like line architectural diagrams while we're talking.
Yeah. That would be really fun.
Yeah. So here comes finally the Surface Hub 2.
Yay.
June. Let's see how it goes.
So was your theory that Steelcase hosted this because they make the base the truth? Is that the real reason? Or just because they wanted to show off some office furniture?
No, it's because Microsoft partnered with Steelcase to make the mounts and the bases and all. And so, you know, they basically got a free place to host an event in New York at Steelcase.
There you go. Yeah.
It'd be like you go to an Amazon event and they talk about groceries from Whole Foods for a little while. And you're like, seriously, this is not why I'm here.
I would like to get one of these. I wonder how they did. They I think there's got to be a market. On the news channels, they all use these live boards. There has to be a
market. The first ones they
broadcast.
Had were Microsoft, Pixel Sense technology,
right.
If I remember correctly. CNN and so
how
forth.
Does I'm sure they didn't talk about this, but I wonder how it shows up under television lights, how it looks, if it gets washed out or not.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
That's the big issue on these. They got to be so bright because they have to overcome the lights.
Yeah. Also, inside there's an Intel 8th generation Core i5.
Nice.
Seems to be a custom version, though they would not talk about anything about it at all. They're just like, it's 8th generation Core i5. That's all we're going to say.
Is there a GPU or does it use Intel?
It uses built-in graphics, not separate graphics.
It's HD probably, right? What's the resolution?
Oh, no, I think it's...
Is it more than that?
4K, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, it might even be more than 4K. It's not HD. It's bigger. It's
well, that's
higher
impressive
than
that you can drive all that with the onboard graphics. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like 84 or 85-inch display. The pixels would be the size of pennies, if it was HD.
Yeah. Yeah, it had one USB-A. Type A, right? And a couple C, no Thunderbolt.
Sure. Why would anyone need Thunderbolt?
HDMI video, a mini display port. So it has like a lot of the things you would expect, but
not everything I'd expect, but
not everything you'd expect.
Sure. It is Microsoft.
Yeah. It really is a pretty device and very thin. It would be cool to have one for sure. It's funny though, they show like it's basically an enterprise device, but in a lot of their pictures, they show it in like things that look like people's kitchens. And I'm like, wow, would anybody ever buy this for a home? I guess you could, It'd be nice to have one
for your hanging around. What is the application for your home?
I know. I guess if you were working at home and you needed to be part of meetings.
Yeah, that's right. Right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How much?
I got to work from home, Leo. It's,
I'm working from home investment.
$9,000. Base price, $9,000. Yeah.
Is it compatible with Netflix?
Well, that's a good point, right? You can't really run. I mean, even those Windows, you can't really just run Netflix on it, can you? You don't have access to the OS, or do you?
No, it's, well, no, but you can, that's a good question, actually. There's so if you're running the base OS. It does run store apps, and so Netflix is a store app. I think it would work.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go. Okay. $9,000, that's not bad. My 100-inch TV cost almost that much.
You could buy a MacBook Pro for that much.
Yeah, my iMac Pro cost that much. Almost that much.
Yeah.
My Mac Pro trash can Mac.
Yeah.
Boy, that was a good investment. Jeez.
It will make a fine aquarium someday.
Well, mostly it's a doorstop. And then I gave it to Nathan Olivares Giles, gave it to him. Mm-hmm. And then he got a job at Apple. He didn't even really need it.
That's amazing.
I should ask him for it back, except I have nothing I can do with it. It's beautiful. It's a work of art.
Yeah.
It's not a great computer.
Yeah, that's not really what computers are supposed to be, though.
I know. It never was a good computer. It never worked right.
I'm not 100% sure on the design aspect of it. But
I RMA'd it a couple of times to Apple. Oh, nightmare. But I'm so tempted to buy a Surface Hub 2S.
Sure.
Except I should hold off for the 85-incher.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's next year.
Now we're cooking.
Going to go to a Tesla dealership to buy that one.
Actually, wouldn't that be funny if the Tesla dashboard included a Surface Hub?
It's a Surface Hub.
So you can put Windows 10 Pro or Enterprise on it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
What would be the use case?
Yeah, so it's for people some people want to use it almost like a giant PC. They want to have a custom Win32 app that they use at their company. And right now, if you don't have a UWP app, you can't put it on the Surface Hub. Yep.
Okay. That's why it's the 2S.
This thing would have to be on the wall 10 feet away from me to use it as a computer display. I could never.
No.
I always thought bigger screens would always be better. But once you hit like 32 inches or so, it's like, I can't. It's like watching a tennis match. You're like,
it is. It's like,
trying to follow the whole thing. Back it's up. Too much.
But you could see the business uses for, custom dashboards, executive dashboards, graphics.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, literally in a meeting space, a bigger screen.
That makes sense.
Of course. There's got to be a cheaper way to do that.
I'd like to all introduce you now to Susan in HR. She has a message for you. I'll be leaving the room.
People are like, wow, she's really life size there. Why is she wearing a death shroud?
What was that movie with George Clooney and Anna Kendrick when his job was to fly around firing people?
Like up in the air, maybe?
Up in the air. And then somebody in the office said, we don't really have to go there to fire them. We could do it via Skype.
Right. Saving the company all kinds of money and ruining his career.
Yeah. You've been fired by Skype on a Surface Hub too.
Exactly.
And what's this X?
X is the model that's going to come out next
year.
That's
the 85-incher.
X is the one with the ability to do things like dynamic rotation and
those cool features they showed.
All the stuff you actually associate with Surface Hub 2.
All the really cool stuff.
Yes.
It. Okay.
Yep. It's on the Intel 5G plan.
That's a little too soon on that one.
Too soon?
Yeah.
I've been calling it an Intel and 5G for like the past year. These guys are buffoons.
It was just so funny.
The funniest thing at the whole launch, though, was Dr. Pizza was there, and he was trying to get them to say why you couldn't rotate it from landscape to portrait mode. And the Microsoft guy is trying to explain it to us, and finally he goes, okay, think of it this way. We put a tic-tac in the device, so it's keeping it from turning.
The original devices were horizontal, like landscape only.
Yeah.
It's a custom version of Windows 10, so... Yeah. They probably pulled that out. There's no feature. There's no option in there, let alone the dynamic rotation. Although I guess, that's not in there either. That would be that's in tablets and stuff like that.
You could do it in a tablet.
It's completely understandable.
The way you can do it, like I said,
why it's not supported in this version. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have to pull the compute stick out of the chassis, flip the thing, then put it back in. So that if there's something in the actual compute device that's like a little tic-tac that's keeping it from turning.
Wait a minute.
It's a tic-tac.
The brain of this thing is a stick, a computer stick.
What she means is it's physically prevented from turning.
No, I understand the tic-tac.
Because there is not a software switch. There's no switch in the software to enable dynamic rotation.
Which there could have been since every Surface Mini little one has.
No. Surface Hub runs its own OS. This thing never supported anything but landscape mode. Right. So they probably there is no feature there to make that happen. And I think at this point, adding it retroactively for these new devices is not really of interest to anybody because they have a new version of the software coming out soon.
Yeah.
They want all that stuff to be part of the 2X.
Right.
So this is the ticky-tacky hub.
He's like, think of it like there's a tic-tac in there keeping it from turning.
That's very strange. Only Peter Bright could drive someone to say that. an insistent, persistent Peter Bright. But I'm once again, if it's wanting Windows, it seems to me that Windows is able to do that. Or is that not a Windows feature?
It's not running Windows.
It's Windows, but like only at the core level, right? It's this version of Windows called Windows 10 Teams. It's not like Windows 10 Pro or anything.
So when you say that they could put Windows 10 Pro or Enterprise on there, you mean Windows 10
Multiple people log in at the same time. There's no interactive user or single interactive user. It's a different system.
When I say put Pro or Enterprise on it, I don't mean Teams. So you can actually strip the OS out and put the real Windows 10 on there if you don't care that it runs like a conferencing system and you want to use it more
this
like a giant.
This isn't as confusing as we're making it sound. I think it's logical and it makes sense.
It's pretty confusing, I think.
Okay. You can either run it with Windows 10 Teams, in which case you need a Tic Tac to keep it from rotating.
No, you don't need a Tic Tac. That's built in, Leo.
It's already built in. The Tic Tac comes for free. It's a free feature.
If I install Windows 10 Pro or Enterprise on it, can I take the Tic Tac out?
That's actually an excellent question.
Because I can rotate
Windows 10
versions.
Does support That's screen really rotation. I guess the question then is, will the hardware provide that information dynamically? And it might not. That might be part of the problem.
So in that case, instead of a Tic Tac, you need a little piece of rice. That's connected to a wire.
I think what happens is by turning off the computer, rotating the display, then turning it on, it senses the orientation at boot up, and it does that correctly at that point.
I would guess that would
actually work. Not that many people would want to do that, but I think that
but
would
you could.
I think so.
That's a non-trivial thing. I mean, we always wanted. On our avatars, you know, because everybody's on Skype, we always wanted them in portrait mode because that would be more natural, right? In effect, you are in portrait mode because we split the screen on this one. But that would just be more natural than landscape.
That's right. Mm.
We don't care about your shoulders.
I spend a lot of time on my shoulders, Leo. We care a little bit.
But that was when we wanted to do it, you know, almost 10 years ago, it was difficult and required a special hardware and so forth. Now you could do it, but we're used to it. Okay, well, we've really driven this one into the ground.
I cannot believe we spent this much time on the Tic Tac.
Well, I'm kind of glad we did, because maybe we can spend less time on the next item.
On the Blockbuster Week for Xbox news.
There's a lot of Xbox news today.
All right, before we get to the Xbox news, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a little time out and talk about our sponsor. Stay tuned, though. The excitement begins in moments. Our show today brought to you by Wasabi. Not that green stuff you get on your sushi. No, I'm talking about something hot, but not for your sushi. It's Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. See, the guys who created Wasabi are actually hard drive geniuses. Jeff Flowers and David Friend. You may know David. I know David very well because he was the CEO of Carbonite for many years, its founder. He and Jeff came up with this and patented this way of writing data on disk sequentially, not as your computer does it, in blocks, which makes it much more efficient. It speeds up the writes by about 600%. It reduces the cost by about 80%. And it was, you know, such a great idea. They said, you know, really, we're using it for Carbonite. We ought to use it for cloud storage, because really that's what Carbonite was, right? Still is, I guess. But they've gone on to this new thing, Wasabi. And it's a perfect time because data storage, getting your data in the cloud, is as important a story in the enterprise as anything. In fact, they estimate 163 zettabytes will be in the cloud by 2025. And all Wasabi's saying is just give us one of those zettabytes. That's all. One with 21 zeros after it. It's a crazy amount of data. Now's the time, if you're thinking about cloud migration, to not do the default thing. Now, we were talking before the show about brand and how, you know, nobody ever got fired for buying IBM, right? Nowadays, nobody ever got fired for using S3 or Google or Azure. But I'm asking you to open your mind to something that's potentially better. It's certainly less expensive. It's faster. And it's got a great model. There was just one tier of service, and egress is free. Unlimited egress is free. That's not like the other guys. It uses the S3 API. You already know how to use it. All your tools already work with it. It's just as secure. In fact, I would say in most cases more secure than your on-prem storage for a couple of reasons. One of the problems with on-prem storage, all you have to do is ask Arizona Iced Tea or Norsk Hydro, the big aluminum manufacturer. Or I just saw a couple of years ago during the Pecha infection. What was the company? Lost $100 million to ransomware. That's the problem with on-prem storage. It's vulnerable. But the beauty of Wasabi is you can designate some storage as immutable. That means it cannot be changed by anybody, by a user, by malware, by anything. It's protected. That is a huge feature. HIPAA compliant. That should tell you something. FINRA compliant. CGIS compliant. And if you have to move a lot of stuff to the cloud, as I know a lot of people do, check out the Wasabi Ball. It allows you to migrate petabytes of data easily, securely, and fast. So you can get that data up there, protected, secure, immutable. And you just, you don't have to worry about telling your investors, we got a problem. Wasabi. Experience Wasabi for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. We've arranged this so you can really bang on it. Normally, I think you get a terabyte, but if you go to wasabi.com, click the free trial link, and use our offer code Windows, no limit. Put as much up there as you want. Really play with it. Bang on it. Upload, download, show the boss. Tell the boss you're saving 80%. Tell the boss it's 6 times faster. And play with it. Verify it for yourself, and you'll see why. This is the new hotness in hot cloud storage. Wasabi.com, WASABI.com. The offer code is Windows. And we thank them for believing in us. We believe in them. And if you'll show your gratitude to us, to Paul and Mary Jo and Windows Weekly, by using that offer code Windows and get a little benefit for yourself. Wasabi.com. All right, Mary Jo, go play with your Microsoft Hub. It's time for Xbox News.
You weren't gone all morning. This thing would have been way lower in the list. That's all I'm saying.
That's true. Paul did all the notes, so I have to suffer through
them. He moved it up.
Actually, I'm playing with this. I usually do Xbox last. I thought I'd move it up, get it out of the way. There's some big news here.
I would say this. If you're going to do it, this is the week to do it because it was a big week for Xbox. Of course, E3's coming, so there'll be another big week.
Yeah, it's never going to stop.
Okay,
so
sorry, Mary Jo.
At an inside Xbox event last night, Microsoft announced a number of things. The biggest one being a new version of the Xbox One S, which does not include an optical drive, and so it's called people are calling it the diskless version.
But it has
which
an SSD, kind of right? It has some storage. No?
No, it has storage. It doesn't have an optical disk.
Yeah.
I'm positive it's not an SSD, unfortunately. But,
oh. Well,
it's
how much storage
Xbox One S
does it have?
All digital edition. How much? 1 terabyte.
Well,
so it's basically
plenty.
Identical to the existing Xbox One S, but without the optical drive. And I think this is kind of a feeler to see where people are at.
Oh, you mean the DVD player?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Got it. So it has a hard drive in it.
Right.
All digital means you can't. You have to download the games. You can't install them from a disc. I get it.
That's right. So the contention here is it seems a little expensive. The list price is $250. The list price on an Xbox One S is $300, but it's never $300, right? It's almost always on sale for $250. Amazon today has it for as little as $232. It does come with a handful of games, but they add up to possibly $60 to $70 worth of games. Seems a little out of touch. But I think the deal is they basically said, look, this thing will always be $50 less than the normal Xbox One S. And so when they have these routine sales, you should expect to see this thing selling for about $200. And that would be the time to consider it. I wouldn't buy it right away. Interesting. I'm curious they don't have an Xbox One X all digital edition. Seems like the kind of people who would be on the all edition train would be on the, the high end console or whatever, but okay. They don't have that yet. Maybe next year. And then the other big news is, as rumored, there is something now called the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is a combination of Xbox Live Gold, which is about $60 a year, and Xbox Game Pass, which is about $100 a year or $10 a month if you pay for it that way. The only sticking point here is that they've only announced the monthly version of this subscription, which is $14.99 a month, which is fine. But the way you save money on this stuff is you buy them in 1 year chunks. And so essentially, like on Xbox Game Pass, instead of paying, I can't do simple math, instead of paying $120 a year, you pay $99, right? So it's a $20 savings. This thing today is the exact same price as buying these subscriptions separately if you pay for them by the month. But it's actually more expensive if you pay for them by the year. So I'm kind of expecting, honestly, that they'll fix that. Like they'll make, 3-6 month packages and then like a year as well. So we'll see what happens there. What else we got? Oh, and Sony, I'm sure completely coincidental to the Microsoft event on Tuesday, announced suddenly some details about their next generation console, which will be called the PlayStation 5 and will support 8K graphics and will be backwards compatible with the PlayStation 4, which is exactly the right way to do it. It's kind of light on the details right now. We don't really know exactly what's going on there. There's some AMD Ryzen hardware happening. Microsoft's expected to do something very similar. Microsoft will probably announce their next-gen console at E3. Sony will probably announce more details about theirs at a private event that they're having that's separate from any of the industry stuff. So there's a little, on the day that Microsoft is announcing a new console, throw in something about a next-gen console was a little crappy on their part. But, good for them. That's probably competitively smart. And if you're heading out to E3 in June, Microsoft now has details about the various things they'll be doing there. The big deal, of course, for Microsoft is they now own and inhabit the former Nokia Theater, which is across the street from the Staples Center, and all of their stuff is over there. So if you're going to Los Angeles, be sure to head over. Well, first, go to the Microsoft site and check out what they're doing, but their stuff is kind of separate from the main show, which is kind of cool.
Are you going to E3?
I don't think so, just because I have so much other travel.
He's too busy playing games to cover games.
Yeah. No, I really want to go to E3.
I could go in your place.
You would love it, Mary Jo. Okay. All the things you love so much about technology.
It'd be so awesome.
We're in one place.
It's like the week before we're going to the Netherlands, Mary Jo and I. We try to do like a date weekend every year in Europe.
yeah, I know. You go for the beer.
Just kind of. Yeah. I believe it's like right before that. So it's kind of and then of course the week before that, we have a bunch of stuff in May work wise and it's just kind of tough timing. So I don't know. I'll think about it as we get closer, but probably not.
Would be fun. This will be with these announcements. This will be an interesting E3 because usually it's just trailers for games that aren't coming out for 8 months.
Well, you know what? We're still going to have that. In fact, they literally promised exactly that.
Yeah.
They've gotten in trouble in the past for talking about hardware at E3, and I've never understood that. I think E3 is the obvious place for a console maker to describe a new console.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if that wasn't a major part of what they're announcing, but anyway, that's my expectation. This one's a little wacky, but Microsoft has announced that they finalized the deal with Warner Brothers to create a movie about Minecraft.
Oh, finally.
Which I know.
It's about time.
Well, don't hold your breath because it's not coming out until 2022.
Well, they got to build all the sets. It takes, this is non-trivial.
Build the sets. I assume it's going to be a cartoon or like a computer generated thing.
No,
I don't know.
It's got to be live action, man.
Oh, God. All right. Well,
by the way, is this just the word Minecraft on page?
That's all we got. That is the one asset that Microsoft provides.
They gave you a picture of the name. Yeah. No video, no Andy. Stills, no
Here's
nothing.
Maybe the movie will be in 3D.
Is Steve going to be in it?
Steve
is Mr. the guy. The Minecraft guy is Steve.
Oh, no. He's on the outs. Have you heard this?
Oh, he's on the outs. He and Clippy are going to Amstel Lightland.
No, this guy's been posting nonsense on Twitter and stuff. Mm-hmm. They've been erasing him from the game. What? You're talking about the guy.
I know who you're talking about. You're talking about the guy with the hat, Notch. Yeah.
Who are you talking about?
Steve's the actual character that you.
Oh, Steve. I'm sorry.
He's Mr. the guy in Minecraft. Yes, his name's Steve.
He actually Minecraft.
It's like Master Chief. It's the Master Chief of Minecraft.
The Doom guy, as it were.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, no, I know. Notch went nuts.
Yeah, he's kind of nutty. Yeah.
Notch went off the deed. He pulled in Eric Sweeney, as I call it. So, I don't know. Anyway, he's on the outs. So that's wacky. And then just one final note on Xbox is if you have an Xbox One, the April 2019 update shipped. It's a minor release. It's like several new features. I think the big one is they've replaced the virtual keyboard with like what they call a mini virtual keyboard. So I believe it resembles, I haven't seen it yet, but I think it resembles like a smartphone virtual keyboard. So on a landscape screen, it's just going to be like floating there in the middle instead of taking up, you know, the whole screen. If you don't like that, you can change it back. But not a lot of like huge new things going on there. But
so question from the Peanut Gallery, Long Dog Wonders, on the discless Xbox, mm-hmm. it'll still have USB ports. Could you attach a USB DVD player?
No. One thing, I don't remember on the original Xbox, with the 360 and the Xbox One, they use a proprietary technology for encryption and so forth. So I could you use one to play like a DVD, you mean, or like a movie?
Well, I think he means installing, but how about playing a movie? Could you do that? Because honestly, the only thing I ever use the slot in my Xbox One X is for playing movies.
The game thing will not work. That's proprietary.
Okay, that's good to know.
I bet the video thing will not work. Literally, the point of this is not to have discs. And so I think the name All Digital refers to movies and content as well as.
And you can stream all that stuff. So.
Yep. Right. Yep.
Right. Can I make an observation on the name, though, of this thing?
Sure.
Sad Xbox One sad.
Really?
See, I would say it's actually ADE, like All Digital Edition.
What is Xbox One S?
How about
All
Sade?
Digital.
But it's pronounced Sade.
No, it's one of those ones that you're kind of like, did anyone
Xbox
think
One
of
S,
that when they
all
were
digital.
Naming
it? Yeah, that's sad. Or Sade. It could be S-A-D-E.
Or Sade.
I think the point of it is it leaves no room for misunderstanding, right? That
all digital. That's it.
Although someone will probably point out that an optical disc is digital. I don't know.
Yeah, it actually fooled me because I thought they meant no hard drive.
To stream from the cloud. It's great. You don't store anything.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't actually. I didn't get it. So now I do.
If you look at an Xbox One S today, there's a kind of a black slit, you know, which is the way it's like front loading drive thing.
Yeah.
That's missing.
There's no more
it
slot.
It literally looks
But you can hardly see it anyway. Thinner. So. It's,
yeah. I will just say, look, I know this isn't the case for everybody, but when I got the Xbox One X, why did that sound weird when I said it? No, I'm sorry. When I got the Xbox One, the original Xbox One, I made the decision that I was only going to go digital. I was never going to install a game via a disc. I did test Blu-ray just to kind of do it, just to see what it was like. I have gone through now three generations of the console. I have never used a game disc for anything. And I know not everyone can do that. I get it. But I think a lot of people can. I think this is a test to see how popular that kind of thing is. And they probably have to include an optical drive in the next one, or at least an option for that. But I think what they'd really like to do is never have a disc again, you know. But that would screw over retailers too. I don't, you know, I'm sure there's a lot that goes into that. But ideally for Microsoft, this is the jumping off point that will eventually lead us to this X Cloud thing.
Nice.
We'll have one less reason to step into a Best Buy. You know, it's a win-win. See, that wasn't too bad.
Xbox One.
Okay.
We spent more time on the Tic Tac thing than we spent.
That's important.
So, when I was in Hawaii, I should have been out there playing in the sand and enjoying the sun, but no, I was installing Microsoft's new Edge. It's kind of like Chrome. I mean, it doesn't. Yeah. It's good. I don't know if I'll make the switch just because I'm already using Chrome.
But I'm going to make a case for why you should.
Okay.
You know,
does it run better on Windows than anything else?
No, that's not why. a lot of people think it does. That's nonsense. But I'm just curious, you know, because Mary Jo, when we talked about this last week, Mary Jo had installed it. She's not exactly a big beta tester type person. I'm curious if you actually use it. Is this your browser now?
No, barely using it. No. Just because... Really? Okay. Of habit.
Inertia.
You know?
Yeah. Yes.
I need to uninstall Chrome or hide Chrome.
By the way, hide crop. Right. That's what I had to do myself, because even when I had both running side by side, I would find myself clicking on the Chrome icon because it's like a muscle memory thing.
Right. Well, but so I got rid of this. This is kind of my question. It looks so much like Chrome. It seems to be indistinguishable from Chrome. Well, why not just keep using what you were using? Because you don't have to move all your cookies and everything over in your bookmarks. Oh,
I'm so glad you asked. I'm going to tell you why.
Tell me why, Paul.
So over the past week, I've been writing a series of articles about the new version of Edge, which, as you said, looks a lot like Chrome. This is a little disarming to Edge fans, of which there are a few. And, you know, they'd like it to look more like Edge. They'd certainly like it to have more of Edge's unique features. And to be fair to Microsoft Edge, it does have a bunch of unique features that you just don't see on other browsers. I made the argument right up front that that's not a good idea, because the idea here is for Microsoft to attract a broader audience than the 3.5% that are okay using Edge. I think the central failure of Microsoft's browser strategy is that it's the only system where people don't use the default browser. It's crazy. Like, Internet Explorer and or Edge are so bad, or at least perceived to be so bad, that they have trained a generation of users to use it to go to google.com/Chrome download Chrome. It's an incredible feat for that to happen. The power of the default is so strong that Microsoft got into antitrust trouble in the United States and in Europe for this. And now it's so weak, in Windows at least, because of how horrible it became. They've completely reversed that. It's a huge problem. Yeah. So I have a feeling that this thing looking and working like Chrome, which you might think is just a natural byproduct, it's Chromium, I get that, but by not tailoring it too much to not look like Chrome, that a lot of normal people are going to bring this thing up thinking they're going to go to Google, and then it comes up and they're like, oh
I don't need to.
Actually, this is great. Now, that's just an opinion. I don't really know. But here's the thing. No matter who you are, you have some kind of a problem with Chrome. And that includes even people who are kind of fans of Google, right? The big thing we hear from like Windows users especially, well, maybe Mac users too, is that it's resource heavy. It takes up a lot of RAM.
No, Mac users too. Computer. Battery life, terrible.
Microsoft is trying to fix that stuff. You know, we'll see how that goes. They've talked about that explicitly. I will tell you that today it's no different than Chrome. Microsoft has a list of, you know, 300 Google things they took out. they replaced most of those with Microsoft things. It's not like, you know, it didn't magically get 1/10 the size and require 1/10 the resources. They're going to add more features over time too. It's going to get bigger and bigger. So don't look forward to that. But the thing is, no matter what your stance is on privacy or security, whatever it is, we all have those experiences where you and your wife are looking at vacations in Hawaii on some kind of a website, and then you go to some other website on a different computer maybe, and you're getting ads for that exact thing. Like, we've all experienced that. Even people who have kind of given up on privacy have this kind of vague thing in the back of their mind. Like, it is kind of creepy and weird what Google's doing here. And so here's a version of Google's browser, which is literally the best browser available today, depending on how you want to measure that, right? Certainly by usage, the user base has voted. It's 65% of all people, mobile and desktop, by the way, use Chrome. So it's all the stuff it is Chrome, minus all the Google stuff that's kind of creepy or spyware or just googly, right? Stripped out of it. And Microsoft has established himself as kind of an Apple-like entity when it comes to privacy and security and all that kind of stuff. They do have that kind of reputation. So you can sync all your stuff through your Microsoft account instead of your Google stuff. It will all work exactly the same way. You can still sign into your Google sites if you go to google.com, whatever, still works. Everything works. I mean, and unlike, say, something like Brave, which still looks a little bit like an experiment and literally no one normal has ever heard of, you know, this is from Microsoft, the world's biggest maker of software. Like, it's just a trusted entity. I actually think that everyone should use this browser once it comes out. Hmm. Whether it will be popular or not is beyond my control. What I'm saying is, I actually think this thing makes tons of sense for everybody. And whereas I was first like, whatever, Chrome based version of Edge is kind of a big deal for Microsoft because they're embracing open source, yada, yada, yada. Honestly, the big thing here is that they could effectively be wresting control of the web. Well, they're never going to take it over per se, but I mean, for those people who care about this kind of stuff, you have an alternative that will essentially be Google without the Google. And I really do think this is huge.
Okay.
But like this discussion came up on Twitter today. It's not going to sync with your Google account information on Edge.
That's right.
It'll sync with your Edge account information. But, once you,
so the way
you can import your Google stuff, though, right?
Yep. So the way it works, if Microsoft's smart, this is what they'll do. Today, the way the thing works is you're using another browser. So you're installing a pre-release version of software. Every browser has a way to import data. You can import your passwords, your favorites, your form fill data, which includes addresses, phone numbers, credit card data, et cetera, et cetera. It's a one-time import. It's not a sync. But if Microsoft is smart, they'll offer that as a first-run experience, which browser are you using now, and they'll sync it right from the cloud. You won't even have to install Chrome. Chrome user, question? Click here.
Mm. Oh, right? Can they do that?
Of course they can. It's all in the cloud. You will have to sign into your Google account.
It's in Google's cloud. Oh, okay.
Right, but that's just a sign.
They just pretend they're Chrome.
We have a method. It's a REST-based API that Google uses to sign into your Google account. And it's a one-time import, and now it's all going through your Microsoft account.
There's only one thing I will dispute in that whole thing, which is I'm not sure people think of Microsoft as a privacy leader yet.
They should. And you might be right. I mean, obviously, but certainly better than Google.
Okay, but I'm using Brave. I agree. You're right, Paul. Nobody knows about Brave, but more and more people do. As a user of Brave, I'm probably not going to switch to Credge only because... I'm already using Chromium in a more private fashion.
Here's what they need is some small percentage of people who do use Google Chrome today to switch to Edge, the new Edge, right? Hopefully, they'll pick up most of the people using Edge today. I'm sure there'll be some burnt, feelings there, whatever. But that 3.5% is immaterial. What if they could get like 10% of Chrome users, that would push them past Firefox, I think there's a real opportunity here for that. Brave today is in a kind of an incomplete state. It doesn't support true sync between devices, especially to mobile. I'm sure they'll get that there.
It does for bookmarks, but only bookmarks.
Okay. But Microsoft has this infrastructure in place, right?
Right.
And it's not there right now as of today, but they'll have that timeline support and all that stuff. It's all going to be...
Honestly, I don't think it even matters if... existing users switch. What it's going to have is a default browser and all new installs
that
of Windows that actually is good and that no one will switch away from.
Yep.
And ultimately, that's all that really matters, right?
When there are people like my wife, who's a normal person, is not technical, doesn't care about technology, but she knows she gets a laptop and the first thing she does is install Chrome, you have a problem.
Yeah.
And overcoming that behavior. I mean,
that's exactly why they did this. That's why they did it.
Yes. I think this is a big part of it. By the way, I think the other big part of it has to do with web apps and with this LightOS thing. Because the other part of this thing that I'm talking about is this, what I'll call an Edge book, right? Which is basically exactly what I just described, but for a Chromebook.
Right.
Where you're giving schools and businesses this lightweight OS based on a browser that is literally exactly the same as a Chromebook, but doing all of your authentication and stuff through Microsoft accounts or through Azure Active Directory accounts.
And that's speculative at this point, right?
Yeah, I made up EdgeBook. I'm just...
okay. I just want to point that out.
This
is Paul's fever dream.
But we do know Windows Lite is happening.
It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm them, I would do it.
It is my opinion, and I'm speculating, that part of the reason that Microsoft switched Edge to Chromium was to do a Chromebook competitor that was literally like, look, it's a Chromebook. It's not Windows 10S with this weird browser nobody wants to use in an app store nobody cares about. It's literally a Chromebook, but you're syncing through the accounts you're already using at school. You're already using at work. It is exactly what I think a bunch of their customers really want. I'm sure tons of people, education and business, have gone to them and said, look, you got to make a Chromebook or a Chrome OS or whatever. You got to, because we don't want to maintain two different systems. And they kind of half-stepped it, with Windows 10S and S mode and whatever. And now they're there. Mm-hmm. I think this is it.
I talked to an ed tech guy a couple of days ago who says we're putting Chromebooks in everywhere. And it's so much easier for us. To maintain,
that's the problem.
We don't have all these IT issues. Yeah. We don't have to re-image Windows machines every five minutes. It's just, it's a better solution.
Right. And so you know, Mary Jo and I, 2 years ago in May, we were out there for that Microsoft Education event. Terry Myerson's walking around with a USB key, and I'm thinking to myself, these people still have no idea why Chromebooks are popular. You know, they have this big, top-heavy, heavily managed, you know, operating system that takes a long time to reset. And what schools want is for kids to come in, open it, log in, and work, close it, everything blows away. Next kid comes in, it just works. That's why I believe that this Lite OS is really what it is Chrome. It's Chrome OS, but with Edge. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It has to be, because that's what schools actually want. Yeah. The thing that Windows people don't want to admit or don't understand or refuse to believe, whatever it is that the students, the teachers, and the administrators at these schools love Chromebooks, by and large. I know some people probably don't. Like because they've used these terrible technologies in the past that never met their needs. Mm-hmm. And here's this thing that's super simple. Normal people can handle it. Sorry. I mean, I'm with you. I love Windows. I get it. I'll always use Windows. But that audience is out there. We just need to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. True.
All right. Credit is. I will.
Credit up.
I will credit up. I will only
credit till it hurts. And then credit a little less.
Credit a little, just below the pain threshold is our recommendation.
You want to, don't stick the Q-tip in too far.
Not too far. Tiny little break, back with the more of the action in just a second. I was just looking at the love page for our canary. People, I know, what does that mean even? I'm talking about the Thinkst Canary, which is a honeypot that can be deployed in minutes, even by somebody who doesn't know anything about honeypots. It is the best way to make your network secure. A lot of talk these days about APT, Advanced Persistent Threats. Companies are being attacked with spear phishing attacks. The bad guys get in and they live on your network for months, collecting data, collecting passwords, collecting information. There's one way to make sure you don't have an APT on your network, and that's a honeypot, a Thinkst Canary. My canary, I'll just show you. This is my canary. Companies spend millions of dollars on IT security, but they still don't know they've been compromised, which blows me away. Marriott, for how many years were the bad guys got into the SPG system and were there for 4 years, which meant they got data on 500 million guests. All you needed, Marriott, was some canaries in there. Here's my canary. I don't know if I can pull this over so you can see it. It's just a little box. It's not complicated. Plugs into your network. You configure it in your browser. And even though to you that just is a little box in the corner there, to the bad guys, it can look like almost anything you want it to. Canaries don't look vulnerable. They look valuable. They look like Cisco switches. They look like, in my case, a Synology NAS. And I turned on a Christmas tree on my canary. So all the services are lit up. But if you want to be a little more, you know, stealth, you could just have a few little services there that'll attract the bad guys. You don't get a lot of alerts. You can see I have a couple of alerts. A few weeks ago, I unplugged my canary. So I just, and this is what you get. You get a roll-up of the alert saying the canary was disconnected. Doesn't say it 100 times. It had been up for 5 weeks. I mean, these things never go down. But then it was reconnected here. So I know. Now, I'll go back a little time, and you see this host port scan? That's the kind of thing you got to worry about when you see that. It gives you all the information. And see, that's one notification with 14 incidents. It gives me an IP address. I noted at the time, that's inside the building. We figured out, that's over next to Megan's desk. She was testing some sort of Western Digital NAS that was scanning our network every few minutes. Needless to say, we disconnected that. But you could also get logins. If a bad guy tries to log into my fake NAS here, and it looks just like a NAS, I mean, it has all of the features of it, I'll get every password he attempted to use. So I'll be able to see completely what he knows, what he thinks he knows. You can set this up in minutes. And within minutes of configuration, it will look just like whatever you say it is, a router, a NAS server, a Linux box, a Windows server. Attackers can't tell the difference, but the minute they touch it in any way, you get the notification. You can also use it to create canary tokens. These are files you can sprinkle around your network. Here, I'll make a new canary token. What do we want it to be? A web page, a DNS server? How about we'll make a Microsoft Word doc, and we'll upload it to the token. We can name it anything we want. We can say, this is payroll information. This is Social Security number. Something that looks good. You can even enroll them in Active Directory if you want. And then, boom, people. Look, see, as soon as somebody tries to, I've had this, I'm giving away my secrets, but I've had this payroll information PDF sitting on my desk for some time. The minute somebody says, ooh, what's that, and opens it, I get notified. Couldn't be more cool. That's a canary token. So you get that too. Unlimited canary tokens. The folks at Canary, that make the Canary, the Thinkst folks, have been in this business for a long time, nearly two decades. They have trained companies, militaries, governments on how to break into networks, and they've used that experience to build this device that is so beloved by people all over the world and some of the biggest companies in the world. You just read this page at canary.tools/love, and you'll see. And you'll see some really big names in security. The chief of security at Slack, for instance, who thinks it's one of the basic tools every network should have. It's very well priced. Instead of a massive upfront cost, canaries are licensed annually. You don't own them. But that's good. If a bird breaks during the year, they just send you another one. No big deal. The pricing easily allows you to try a few and scale up if you want. Some small businesses like ours have just a few canaries. Some large banks have hundreds of them. They're deployed all over the world, literally on all seven continents. I'll let you figure out what that means. Some of the biggest names in Silicon Valley run them and love them. You will too. In fact, it's really kind of amazing because normally if you have a honeypot, you don't tell anybody you've got it. But people love this canary so much, they tweet about it. They tell the world about it. Don't end up on this year's list of the top 10 data breaches. Go to canary.tools/twit. As an example, $7,500 a year, you'll get five canaries. And as I said, you can get any number you want or any configuration of this. But sample price, $7,500 a year for five. You get your own hosted console. You get upgrade support and maintenance for a full year. But you can buy as few as a couple and, you know, you get to figure it out. And I'm going to make it even more valuable for you because, as always, we've got a deal. If you use the offer code TWIT and you put that in the How Did You Hear About Us box, it'll take 10% off your canaries forever for the life of your account. We know you're going to love your Thinkst Canary. We do. But if you're unhappy at any time, you can return your canaries. Actually, not at any time, but you have a two-month window. That's a long time, 60 days to get a full refund. Can't wait to the end of the year and then say, oh, I use it for a year, but I want my money back. No. 2 months, though, that's pretty good. Why don't you try it? You got nothing to lose. Canary.tools/twit. Canary, canary.tools/twit. It's like the canary in the coal mine, right? Enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box for 10% off for life. It just makes you feel better to know you've got canaries all over your network. So if anybody's... seriously. So if anybody's snooping around...
It's funny you pick canary since we were just talking about Credge. And, you know, there's canary build. And
oh, that's right. I think it's the same idea, right? A canary in the coal mine to be the kind of first warning, first... warning is something wrong. Okay, let's see. Windows 10. We haven't talked about that yet, right?
Oddly enough, we do not have a new build of Windows 10 to discuss.
Oh, nope. That confirms what you said two weeks ago. We're done, right?
Oh, it's done.
It's done.
They're just running it through release preview now.
This will be one 1H219Q1?
Yep.
Okay.
19H1, now called the May update.
Ah, well, that gives us a time frame.
Yep.
Okay. So if you liked 1809, you'll love 1905.
If you wanted to use
they're calling it 1903, even though it's the May update, just to keep things a little more confusing.
Okay. Well, but the last one was 1803, so I presume they're just going to do 03 and 09 from now on, right?
We think. They haven't said that right. again, but
who knows?
I guess Microsoft's version software cannot support alphanumeric characters or something. Yeah, I don't know.
That could be it.
So it's done. Yeah. Good.
Yep.
What, is there anything else to talk about? I see Firefox for ARM.
Yeah. This is worth a quick mention since we were talking about Kredge. So Microsoft's not the only one trying to do some work, in Microsoft's case with Google, around getting their browser to work natively on ARM 64. Firefox has been working with Qualcomm on this too, and they actually released their first beta build of Firefox for ARM-based laptops. I think that was last week. So everybody's trying to do this, get their browser to work natively on ARM 64, and Google and Microsoft are working to get Chromium to run natively on Windows on ARM devices, but they have not yet released a version that does that.
Yeah, I think Qualcomm said they were also working with Opera too, didn't they? Wasn't it Firefox?
Oh, yeah,
and
I think
Opera?
So. Yep, I think so. So
yeah, I looked at a dev or canary version of Firefox on ARM a couple of months ago. I haven't looked at the beta yet.
Mm-hmm. So you can't just run your app on ARM-based Windows.
No, you can. You can. It has to be 32-bit.
Then it runs in an emulator. So they're doing a 64-bit? Is that?
They're trying to do native. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, a huge advantage there. I mean, for all kind, resource usage, performance.
Yep.
Allegedly, I mean, we'll see. But that's the goal.
Cool. And let's talk about the cloud. Actually, let's talk about security, really, because this has not been a good week for Microsoft security-wise.
Yeah, this week's been fine. I guess this happened a few months ago.
Well, no, but then there's this whole Office problem too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I guess the Microsoft became aware that some Outlook.com accounts have been compromised by hackers, actually what they called cyber criminals. And apparently, I think they're a little light on the details, but it looks like what they did was a human engineering kind of a thing on a customer support rep. And that's how they were able to break into the system using their credentials somehow. It went undetected for some period of time, some tiny percentage of users, as they always say. They have alerted everyone who was compromised. And basically, they're just saying, change your password. So I guess it's all set.
But, from what I was reading about this, I didn't write about it because we have someone on ZDNet who does security specifically. Mm-hmm. But it sounded like Microsoft told them very few people were hit on Friday. Yep. Like they admitted it publicly and said this had happened. But then Motherboard, I think it was, went back to them and said, well, it seems like this is more severe than you're telling us. And they showed a different email. So Microsoft sent out two different emails, I think, to different groups that were affected. Okay. And so it seemed like maybe it was more severe. And then Microsoft said, yeah, okay, you got the email, whatever. What I've noticed, though, on Outlook.com, and I don't know if you guys have noticed this too, but I'm getting so much spam in that account, and I didn't used to. And I was curious over the past few weeks.
It's been a problem for me for a few months now. Like really obvious phishing stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, I've had to go to Outlook.com to report phishing attempts several times, I would say, over the past 2 months. Yeah.
Yeah. And it made me a little nervous because I thought, was I affected? And I didn't get an email?
I got one today. It was some kind of a, it's probably gone because I reported it.
Yeah.
But it was like an app, supposedly from Apple, includes a docx file, which obviously I opened because, I'm an idiot.
Because, sure, why not?
Yeah, what could go wrong?
I don't know if it's just that they're like it's a little too weirdly coincidental to be coincidental that suddenly this has been going on for months, and then this is I've been noticing this for a while too. Made me a little nervous.
It's only consumer accounts, so supposedly they're all on the web. Office 365 commercial stuff has not been impacted by this.
And you know why that's weird too? Aren't they using the same underlying technology?
That's what people have been saying, but you know what? It kind of doesn't matter what the underlying technology is because the way they broke in was through a customer support rep. So those people obviously don't have any insight into the commercial accounts. They don't have a way to access it. So
yeah. Okay.
It wasn't like a flaw in Microsoft's Outlook.com. It was a flaw in some person's brain.
Was it that they got the guy's password and then just came behaved like him? Or did
they're not? Yeah, they're not saying.
They're not really saying, right?
But that, I mean,
whatever it was is fixed. Yeah. This is like the TSA.
It's fixed, you know? Now.
Whatever that happened before, that's not happening again.
Yeah.
Anymore. Something different might happen. Yeah, we can't predict the future.
We don't know. Yep. All right. Well, and they didn't say who. Are they going to notify people who? They have to.
They already have. Yes.
They have.
Yeah, I think you have to now. Yep. You don't have that option.
Ironically, those notes probably went to your spam folder. Yeah, you might want to
check it out.
Yep.
And I don't know what's going on with Office, but somebody, I was seeing news stories that implied
that
this is, well, it's the new vector of attack. So
offices?
Yeah. So
Office is the classic vector of attack.
70% of attacks, this is according
to... this was a report.
Yeah,
somebody did a report on this. Yeah.
70% of attacks online now are attacking Office vulnerabilities.
Wait a minute. You're saying that Office is more insecure than Adobe products?
Well, just that, no. It's not saying anything's more insecure, just that, you know, the hackers have voted. And according to Kaspersky, 70% of the attacks their antivirus products detected in the fourth quarter of last year were trying to exploit vulnerabilities in Microsoft Office. I think that's a testament, really, to the fact that Windows is being... successfully and aggressively patched.
Plus the whole Visual Basic for Applications thing.
Yeah, you've got macros. I mean,
right.
You know?
So, you know, VB's still being used, folks. It's good.
I think if you did the same analysis this quarter, you'd say WinRAR.
Yes.
Because that half a billion, and Steve beats this drum every week, but I'll say it again. Half a billion people use WinRAR to unzip files. And right. WinRAR has a horrific flaw in it that allows an attacker to put a compressed ACE file on your drive and use that to get in your system.
Right.
And people don't patch WinRAR. There's no automated patch system. So WinRAR sent out emails to everybody who registered, but a lot of people don't register.
Yep.
And a lot of people registered 8 years ago with a different email address. So update your WinRAR, and you have to do it manually.
I used to be a big WinRAR user, and I think I used to use, it was like an encrypted RAR file kind of thing.
Sorry, there's a picture of my salad. I didn't mean to show you.
Is there like a goat eating that? What's going on?
That's my lunch. Yeah, I'm Mr. Keto, just like you, Paul. I have that with a big beer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yum.
What was I saying before I my salad so rudely interrupted us? Anyway, WinRAR, update it if you're using WinRAR. That's the bottom line.
Yes, and then maybe you use something else.
Yeah.
Because it's like
2019. You use 7-Zip, Paul was saying.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, Steve was saying, yeah.
Yeah, I do. That's what I use.
Everybody uses... Anybody who's still using WinRAR is an old-timer, I would think.
Yeah. No, but I still have, like, up on my NAS, probably, or up in OneDrive, I think I have encrypted RAR files.
That's from, what you're saying.
You know, 15 years ago or something.
Right.
I'm sure they're just sitting there festering with a virus or
but
something.
RAR is a standard format. You can probably use 7-Zip.
I don't know. It's weird because I've tried to open those with 7-Zip, and it doesn't... It's like, we don't know what this is.
What is this?
I know. Now I want to know what's in there. I lock this stuff up for a reason. I don't know.
It's your. If you find my Bitcoin wallet password, let me know, will you?
No, it's quite a bit older than that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Microsoft, and this just in, will not provide facial recognition technology to California.
But so the reason this is interesting.
There's a bunch of hippies there. Why?
Yeah, exactly. It's you liberal West Coast. No, it's because... Mike, remember back in December, Microsoft actually warned that its own AI facial recognition software was biased toward white men.
Mm-hmm.
That there was something wrong. Because software engineers are men and are stupid, and they tested it on men.
Yeah.
And so when they use it against people who are like women or different colored people, whatever, it's biased against those people. So they've literally warned people, like companies and governments, not to use it. So the state of California came to them and they wanted to use it in police cars so they could, put a camera on a driver and it would do some kind of a AI facial recognition thing. And they were like, yeah, we're not going to let you do that because there's a higher propensity of false positives on people of color or women or whatever it is. And they just don't want that to happen. Microsoft, please do not buy our software. It's the, where do you not want to go today? I don't know.
Well, it's also interesting because so many other companies' employees are protesting and saying, don't supply facial recognition software to certain governments or to the DOD. But Microsoft's been really consistent on that side and saying, no, we're going to do that because this is part of our business and patriotism.
Law enforcement is, I don't think many people would have a problem with that, generally speaking. I don't think there's been any outcry at Microsoft over their software at law enforcement. I think it was literally that they are concerned that it doesn't work and it would lead to bias. And they just don't want to be. Well, you know the whole China thing, right? There was a company in China claiming to be a Microsoft partner using Microsoft facial recognition software to help the government spy on its own citizens in some a certain city, I think it was. And Microsoft was like, we don't have anything to do with that. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So I think they're just kind of sensitive to that kind of thing right now.
That's right. The Chinese are using face recognition against the Uyghurs. Muslim minority. Well, and I think Microsoft learned that their face recognition also doesn't work well with people with tans. And too many people in California have tans.
Right. Right.
I don't know.
It appears to be an orange thing, maybe an orangutan.
No, this is a problem, not just with Microsoft, but almost all facial recognition has a racial bias. And it's because they train it with white faces.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they're trying to fix that.
Yeah.
It's like when I point my Huawei phone at objects, it tells me what they are, right? So I'm taking a picture of the sky, and it says blue sky. It's like, yeah, thanks. Thanks for a lot. Thanks for the help.
It's blue, huh? Or
you pointed at like it was a pig statue, and it said dog. And you're like, no, but
close.
Like, would you have changed the algorithm if you knew it was a pig? Like, what is the...
Okay, four legs. Curly tail? I mean, it still could be a dog. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Paul called it.
Well, I didn't predict it, but I recommended it.
And you were right.
Maybe, yeah, I mean,
according to rumor.
I don't know why I thought of it back, and I think it was in January or whatever, but earlier this year, I was thinking about maybe because Surface headphones were coming out. I don't remember the exact details, but I remember when we went to that event, because remember they announced the Surface Hub 2, no, sorry, Surface Studio 2, Surface Laptop 2, Surface Pro 6, and then they had these headphones. And of course, Microsoft isn't exactly a big consumer company. And the way Panos Panay presented it was like, you know, open space work, you know, open workspaces and offices, and you want to block out the noise. And I was thinking, you do see that kind of thing. You do see people with the over-the-air headphones. But it seems like in this day and age, more people would want earbuds, right? Because they cover the, you know, they don't have the big sweaty, you know, thing over your head. And I thought he made kind of a weird case for it. Like, I wasn't quite on board with it. And it occurred to me, you know, what they really need to do is make earbuds. And apparently they are. So, as Brad reported this week, sometime this year, Microsoft will be selling earbuds, which, no, I don't think are going to compete head-to-head with AirPods. Microsoft does not have the consumer reach of an Apple, for sure. But prosumers... workers in open office spaces, et cetera, commuters, whatever. I think it's, I think this makes more sense than the Surface headphones.
And you know why I think they're doing this, really? It's not so much that Microsoft wants to get into all these audio peripherals. They're looking for more ways to get people to use their voice and to capture their voice. And so Surface headphones, you can talk to Cortana, and I bet these will be the same. So they don't have speakers, you know, they don't have a successful speaker like the other voice assistant companies, but maybe this is another way for them to kind of edge their way into that market.
Edge. Nice word usage edge. There.
Credge their way into the market.
Credge their way.
Well, it's true. The AirPods.
Get a little, Mary Jo, get a little credge in your.
The AirPods use Siri and the Google's Buds use Google. So yeah, it makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
Although, honestly, I have a confession.
I know.
I removed all traces of Cortana from my new laptop. because I don't want to talk to my laptop.
One of the first things I do. Yeah, I don't never use it. I don't care about it. Yeah. It's not malicious.
It's different when you're walking around, I guess, and you know, being able to say, "Play my song," or you know, that's.
I think it makes sense in a car. You know, there's I think Anchor is selling a little thing.
For sure, in a car. Yeah.
Cigarette port, and it you just talk to it and does stuff through Bluetooth. Yeah.
Google's now going to sell one with Google Home. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Microsoft.
Yeah, this one's hard to explain.
Has eliminated. I'm going to use the word eliminated. One of the Surface Go combos.
All right. So the problem with Surface Go is it's underpowered, right? And so the base configuration, which is $400, is 4 gigabytes of RAM, which is inadequate for Windows, and 64 gigabytes of slow eMMC storage. And so my advice to if you want to go Surface Go. Do not buy the base configuration. For $150 more, or $550, you can buy a high-end configuration. Same processor, but 8 gigs of RAM, perfectly adequate for Windows, and NVMe-based SSD, which is much faster than eMMC, 120 gigs. So that's a great configuration. Yes, it is more expensive, but if you're going to go that route, that's the one you want. And then the outlier was, in the beginning, Costco had a version for $500 that was 4 gigs of RAM and the faster 128 gig SSD for some reason. And then Microsoft started selling it from their online store and I think from their retail stores. So there have been 3 Surface Go configurations. Kind of would hope they'd get rid of the base configuration, although I think the issue is it's $399. They want to get people in the store. But they just killed, or what do you say, eliminated the... Mm-hmm. The mid-level configuration, right, which is 4 gigs of RAM and 120 gigabytes of SSD storage. So they're back to the original 2 configurations, of which you should only consider one. Actually, you should consider none because whatever. But it's
– Yeah, because I got your recommended level one and it's still slower than molasses.
Yep. It's still – you're still limited by the – it's a small device. The battery life is not great. And, of course, Pentium gold processor or whatever. But
the best thing is the size.
It's really a cool little guy. It is. I like him.
Yeah.
But I don't, it's I the little I don't pick him up. Yeah. I couldn't. I think I can't. Yeah. I think I can't.
No, you can't.
No, I couldn't. I was wrong. Acer has announced a new... Acer's been going through some interesting permutations. Yeah. For a long time, Acer made a cheap, really cheap line that we never recommended because it was so cruddy. And then a kind of prosumer pro line that was better. In fact, a lot of manufacturers for years.
And Mary Jo had one of those, right? Wasn't you had
the S7. I loved my S7. Yeah. We both did. So Acer, that's the one we recommended.
Yeah. They're an interesting company. Obviously, in the United States, they're not in the top 3 or 4 or whatever. They're a smaller PC maker. But, you know, worldwide, it's a slightly different picture. And I'm curious what you guys think about this. They had an event in New York that I went to last week. They introduced new versions of a bunch of different computers, which is fine. But they also introduced a brand new brand of premium PCs called D-Concept, which is whatever. The name is whatever it is. But they have multiple desktop computers, multiple portable computers, and they also have displays and peripherals and things like that. And the point of this is to address a new segment of the premium market that they think is going to be bigger than gaming, and gaming has been huge for them, right? If you think about gaming PCs, actually – they may only be 5th or 6th in the United States, but when it comes to gaming PCs, they're number 1 and number 2 by PC model in the United States and in a bunch of other countries. And they actually do better than companies like HP or Lenovo or Dell or Alienware or whatever. But they've heard from a lot of their customers that people who buy gaming PCs always use them for other things as well, which makes tons of sense. And then there's this market of creative professionals who – basically, they look at PCs and they find that only gaming PCs meet their needs from a performance perspective. But these things are also decked out with fans and giant skull logos and things. And they're like, they're just not appropriate for what they're looking for. And so they've heard this call for basically what is gaming class PCs, but with way better thermals, less sound and noise, what they call library quiet decibel rating, like 40 dB. And, you know, these computers are hot. They're beautiful. Like, they're really beautiful.
They look a lot like the Huawei and MateBook X. I like the red one. That's really pretty.
They're nice computers.
I agree with them 100%. People are always saying on the radio show, they're saying, well, you know, I want to do video editing. I want, you know, do those kind of prosumer stuff. Should I get a gaming PC? Because that's the configuration.
Because there's like these computers, the normal computers and business class computers. But if you want to get something that's like a, has the graphics for video rendering or whatever, you're basically buying either a portable workstation, which is crazy expensive, thick and heavy, et cetera, or you're getting a gaming PC like this monstrosity you're showing here. Now, for a certain audience, like, that thing's incredible.
This is really horrible. It's Predator.
It's crazy. Well, but the point of that, though, is you pull the keyboard forward, and then you can vent air out of the top of it, and that lets you overclock it.
Wow. So,
I know, it's nuts.
That's a gaming computer.
Yeah, but go down to the bottom, because that's I think I only have one photo, unfortunately.
Lord, this is really
also a gaming computer.
Yeah. It's not a laptop.
No, go to the
kid has this one. This is the Republic of Gaming.
Yeah, my son has this.
Yeah,
So this is an example of one of these computers they've designed.
I like the design.
Yeah, it's a good idea, and I think it's a smart market to go after.
I agree.
Obviously, Apple has been kind of a big presence in this market, but on the other hand, they don't really have any options for touch at all. They don't really support pen natively unless you buy a Wacom or something. I think there's a big opportunity there. Microsoft plays in the periphery of this. HP has like a Sprout computer for creative professionals. Dell, remember, came out with, I think it was a year ago, with that Canvas Surface Studio-like computer. But these guys have basically said, look, we think this is the next big thing. And you know, the PC market's falling, but there are these growth markets where things are taking off, and this is one of them.
This is actually where I think Microsoft missed the boat, because the Surface Studio should be a much higher end, faster machine. Well, but I guess the screen is so expensive, they don't want to charge
$5,000. As a boutique PC maker, they still don't have the ability to come out with a full range of computers at different price points.
Like, but they just use one, and everybody who comes in and sees it says, I love that. I want that.
And then they're like, what is that hissing sound? Is that a laptop hard drive? Or, you know, like it's.
Yeah, exactly.
It's weird what they did there.
Yeah. We souped mine up so it's at least usable. We put different drives in and stuff. But
yeah.
No, I think Acer's smart. I think this is a good category.
Yeah, I do too. I meant to write this up. I haven't written it up yet. I thought I'd kind of throw that out here for the first time. But I think they might have, you know, discover is a tough word. I mean, obviously creative professionals are out there, but, you know, they basically said that when this succeeds the way we think it's going to, our gaming PC business will be a subset of this. You know, gaming PCs will be like these PCs, but blown out for those kind of extreme gamer types.
This is great. I mean, it doesn't have, obviously, the cooling specs of that Predator, but...
No, but it wouldn't.
Well, but that's the thing. I mean, it isn't going to have the same performance as those high-end gaming PCs, or is it? I mean,
it won't be exactly right. But the goal is for these things to be much better than your typical business class quad core, Pentium. Right. Pentium, Core i5, whatever. I mean, but the goal here is the thermals are the big deal for them.
Right. Cool. I think that's
looks good.
Smart move. So
I think so.
HP is not being left behind either. New HP computers, right?
Yeah. I mean, nothing like new from a kind of computer perspective, but their mid-level elite books are taking a lot of the cues from the high-end stuff and bringing it down to the mid-market, which I think is always cool. So that's kind of the sweet spot. And then they updated their ZBook portable workstations, which, you know, thin light, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that they announced this week that's most interesting to me is a 32-inch, it's a QHD, it's QHD, so it's like... what do you call that? Like 1440p. No, it's not a UHD, but gorgeous, gorgeous monitor. One of the big issues I have with HP stuff, like I'm using an HP all in one right now, but I have to put it on a Kensington stand because they don't do enough vertical adjustment. So they finally figured this out. A lot of the displays do have this, but this new display does have the vertical adjustment.
You're talking about the all in ones?
Yeah. You can't really see it in this picture of the display, but that thing goes up and down so you can adjust it to whatever.
Oh, so it's not just all in ones, it's standalone display.
Too. Yeah.
Nice. HP's making
also
good
more
gear
security
now,
stuff.
I think.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. I love their laptops.
Yeah. And I know Mary Jo does too. Quick check. Have you bought one yet?
No, but I'm testing out. In fact, I brought it to the event today. The HP, what is this called? EliteBook?
EliteBook 1030.
Is it called X360 also?
Probably.
It has a lot of numbers. Yep. It's a 13-inch tentable, foldable, whatever you call that thing.
Great. How do you like the keyboard?
The keyboard's really great. It's a little heavy. Battery life is okay. Not fantastic. Panos came by and he's like, what are you using now?
Oh, like, man.
Another HP.
At least Balmer only knew what shoes you were wearing.
Right. Every time, Panos is always like, is she using a Surface? Nope.
He really wants you to use a Surface, of course.
He does.
Yeah, but it's not lappable, Panos.
Yeah, and somebody said something next to me about lappability, and he goes, let's not go there again.
Okay.
Like, okay, then.
Okay. Sure. All right, let's take a little break. The back of the book coming up on Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Our show today brought to you by this little doohickey right here. When you come to visit our studios, it used to be you would have to fill out a lot of paperwork, 4 or 5 pages of legalese on paper with a staple. I mean, now we're using Envoy. This is a modern visitor management system. It's running on an iPad, and it is awesome. So one of the issues, of course, a lot of business workplaces have is that you can't just let people walk in the door. You're going to have them sign in, right? And you may have, wants my last name. Not enough just to tell them I'm Leo. All right. Let's see if it knows I'm a VIP. Oh, you see, it even knows my email because I've been here before. Look at that. Am I an adult? You bet. My full name, same as before. Oh, welcome. Because I've already signed the agreement, I didn't have to sign it again. If your visitors are meeting somebody, it'll automatically notify them, and it does it on Slack or, you know, Salesforce chat or whatever you use. It supports everything, G Suite, Box, too. When visitors arrive, they sign in on the iPad kiosk. They enter their details. They sign any legal documents like NDAs, and they do it all on the iPad. Very easy. And, you know, these are cheap. You can have 5 or 6 if you have a busy front desk. Easy peasy. The Envoy then automatically notifies their host, saves you time and hassle. Your employee knows who's coming and when, so no more walking into the lobby and going, oh, you're here. What are you doing here, Dad? That kind of thing is a thing of the past. By the way, they have other software, too. We have the Envoy front desk delivery software. So if people, and they often do, you know, they have packages delivered to work. This will automatically notify them. Your box is at the front desk. Keeps track of when it's been picked up, who picked it up, that kind of thing. This is an awesome solution. The Envoy visitors solution eliminates the paper logbook, which really didn't give you any value anyway. You can sign in unlimited visitors, print customized badges. You can connect it up to a badge printer, send alerts when VIPs arrive. So, you know, no more does, the vice president walk in the door and nobody knows who he is. It's going to say, well, he's here, and it tells the right people, even notifies administrators about unattended guests. So your security is improved. You can integrate it into other security systems like Wi-Fi access or ID checks, even emergency notifications. Quick to the front. I'm focusing on the benefit to you, the security benefit to you, but honestly, our visitors far prefer this. It's friendlier. It's a friendly way to welcome people to your business without intimidating them and still protect yourself. And it works for companies of all kinds, even in highly regulated industries, because it does meet security and compliance regulations in your industry. Companies like Nike, Pinterest, Spotify, all have worked with Envoy. Over 30 million visitors welcomed. And I can tell you that's not just here. That's other places, too. Protect your people, your property, and your ideas the welcoming way with Envoy, E-N-V-O-Y. Over 10,000 workplaces worldwide choose Envoy to make that great first impression. Once we started using Envoy, I just fell in love with it. It's really awesome. Go to envoy.com/twit. You can start a free trial today. If you've got an iPad, you can download it and put it on there right now. Envoy, envoy.com/twit. the better way to welcome visitors to your business. Thank you, Envoy. Visitor management for the modern front desk. Envoy.com/twit. Use that URL so they know you heard it here. That's important to us. Now it's, you should get this for your house. Yeah. The Lower Macungie Village House.
Close.
The Upper Lehigh Valley. Somebody said, would you stop calling it the Lower Macungie Valley? It's Lehigh Valley.
Jeez.
What is that? Am I wrong?
You know what? The way they name things here is so screwed up, I wouldn't get sensitive about it. So, for example, we live in a town called Lower Macungie. Our mailing address is in Emmaus. And I'd love to spend an hour and a half explaining why that is the case. But let me tell you something. This place is messed up when it comes to that stuff. It makes no sense.
Did George Washington ever sleep in your basement?
Probably.
Yeah.
You know, probably.
Probably. What's your tip of the week?
Right up the street from Valley Forge, you know?
Yeah, you're near there, right?
Yeah, it's not that far.
The place where the winter was so bad that Washington had to get wooden teeth. Or I might be confusing.
Yeah, I experienced that winter last year.
Yeah, I might be confusing legends, but you get the idea.
Actually, so there's some breaking news, guys. Apparently, Microsoft has updated the version of Edge on Android, which I'm not seeing, but I guess there are pictures of it, where you can choose what to sync with, meaning the shipping version of Edge or the insider version of Edge, which is Credge. And
so
if you've switched to, yeah, that's actually really cool. Now,
but do you have to be on Canary?
I don't know.
To do it. Do you have to be an insider?
Well, you have to be on in Canary or Dev, I would imagine. I mean, I don't think it matters which version. I'm just not seeing it on Edge Mobile.
Yeah.
So there's basically a sync settings in settings, and you just choose which one you want. And so obviously, because this thing is pre-release, you're not getting the full sync there yet. But if you've already synced your other data to the browser, it will still be there. You can just start syncing with the new one now. So anyway, that just happened. I'm still fog of warring that. I do have a bunch of tips. I'll try to run through these real quick. A lot of them, Mary Jo, I'm sorry, are Xbox related. So right now, for the next, I think it's 10 days, is what Microsoft says is the biggest sale of the year at the Microsoft and Xbox stores. Games are up to 60% off. Controllers are off. There's all kinds of stuff. Just go to Xbox.com and check that out. There's a bunch of stuff going on there. Today, a company called Numskull announced a full range of official Xbox merchandise. And so they're things like coasters, coffee mugs, socks, stuff like that. And that sounds lame, but you got to look at the stuff. It's awesome. Like the, like the buttons on the controller. So like my Xbox controller, it's got these, Y, X, A, and B buttons. They have those as coasters. Which is like excellent, you know. So that's kind of cool.
You've already ordered all of this, haven't you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Those are his feet.
Yeah, exactly. Xbox, get your Xbox socks going there.
Yeah,
some good stuff.
Numskull is—they're the gas station earbud brand, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think they might be. I think they're in gaming too. I think they might. If they don't make gaming controllers, they might make those little like the tops for the D pads and stuff. Like I think they do stuff like that.
I like the socks.
Yeah.
They're Xbox green.
Yeah. That's cool.
I want that mug.
I know. By the way, that logo turns white if there's hot liquid inside the cup.
Oh, okay. Yep. Done. Ordered. That's awesome.
I know. It's good.
It's ceramic and steel. I am not carrying this wallet, however.
I would rather carry a Hello Kitty wallet than this.
Excuse me, are you in the Super Friends? What is with the wallet there?
Exactly. Form of an elephant. or would that be shape of an elephant? I don't remember. It doesn't matter. So now that the magic window has closed on Windows 10 version 1903, one of the weird little issues until it's available publicly is like how... What if you wanted to clean install it? Like you want to blow away your computer, you want to start over from scratch, you don't want to go back to the old version. You know, what do you do? And there is a way. I haven't written this up yet. This isn't a huge tip per se, but if you reset your computer or just use the ISO from the Windows download site, whatever that is, you will get 1809, obviously. Do not update it because actually there's a little blocker apparently that's temporary. But then enroll into the Windows Insider program, but enroll into the release preview ring. because that's where 1903 is now. Reboot your computer, come back, check for updates. You'll get 1903. Install it, reboot the computer, and then just disenroll from the Insider program, and you'll be right on shipping version of 1903. So it's kind of a little workaround just to get going on 1903 if you want to do that right now for this weird little, I'll call this the post-magic window period. And then, Mary Jo, you might know more about this than I do. There's something called the Office Home Use Program, and basically what it allows employers to do who are in Microsoft Software Assurance Program is let their employees buy various versions of Office at often a steep discount. Yeah. And they just added at some point, I don't know when this happens, but before it was all like commercial versions of Office. Now you can purchase Office 365 Home or Pro, or Personal, rather. The prices aren't awesome, actually. They're like, it's like $69 and $54 or something like that. Like they're not, it's not a huge discount, but it is a discount. Yeah. Something to know about.
Yeah, they're redoing the whole home use program right now. And it launched already in a number of countries outside the U.S., but it's supposed to be launching soon in the U.S.
If you go to the site, it looks like it's up for the U.S. Like it looks like it's there.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yep.
I had heard nothing about it, so I don't know what the – I don't know. I don't know when this happened. Yeah,
I'll send you a link. You can see here.
Okay. Yeah, somebody tipped me off that this was available now. So yeah. I believe this is fairly new or brand new even.
It should be. If it's in the U.S. now, it's very new.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, look at that. Okay. Yeah. Let me get the video back. So I clicked on your link like an idiot.
Sorry.
Okay, so.
Sorry. I'm like, here, let me send you a link.
I clicked on it. Here, hold on, guys, while I read this article. you know, you learn something on these podcasts.
You're new here.
So, sorry. And then I just have one app pick, fortunately. Last week, this technically doesn't come from Microsoft. It's a third-party game maker. But there's a new mobile version of Forza, which to my eyes looks a lot like those Asphalt-type games or Need for Speed or whatever. It's only on Windows 10 right now, but it's coming to iOS and Android soon as well. It's free. It's got, you know, in-app purchases, obviously, but Turn 10 Studios.
Nice.
So, obviously, Forza is a big gaming brand for Microsoft. And now there's a mobile version.
Hey. Well, it turns out I said I was going to do a pick this week, but I spoke too soon because Mary Jo Foley.
Oh, she took it.
Already has it.
Oh, did I take your pick?
Well, I got it from a ZDNet article, so I guess you really kind of own this pick. I'll let you have it, but I'll back you up on it.
And you can chime in because
it's really good.
I only know what somebody else wrote. So, there are a lot of different Linux distros that work on Windows subsystem for Linux on Windows 10.
All of them, oddly, in the Microsoft Store.
Right.
Yes.
Where one gets Linux.
That's where you get it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's where
of course. From. Where else would you go to
Daddy,
get
Daddy, where does Linux come from?
The Microsoft Store.
Oh, that makes sense.
But now there is a Linux distro that was made specifically for WSL, and it's called Penguin. P-E-N-G-W-I-N.
Used to be what?
W Linux.
W, yeah, right.
From Whitewater.
Penguin is actually a much better name.
It's a way better name.
Yeah.
And it's based on Debian Linux and some work from Microsoft Research. So to run it, you have to be running Windows 10 version 16215 or higher. And there's a special sale on it right now, $10, normally $20. So is it better than the other distros? I guess we'll have to ask Leo once he has a chance to.
Oh, I've been using it. I got it as soon as I saw that article. So nice. I was using Debian, which is my, you know, one of my favorite distros in general. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people use Ubuntu, and both of those are free. But what you get is you still get Debian basically, you know, and all, you know, apt and all the stuff that you are used to. But they put in a lot of scripts. In fact, there's a whole installation process that it runs through. And it gives you a lot of options, some of which you could do yourself. You know, it says, do you want to install NeoVim or Emacs? And you can check a box and it'll do it. But anybody who uses Linux can do that pretty quickly. But some of it is stuff that really does make WSL better. Things like adding a right click to the Explorer so you can open a directory in Linux is really handy. And it also links your home directory into the Linux command line. So it makes a lot of things that I ended up doing, you know, by hand. it automates a lot of those. So if you're new to Linux or new to Linux on Windows, it's really probably a good idea to spend the $10 and get Penguin. I mean, it's nothing you can't do, but that's basically what Microsoft Research's contribution was a bunch of startup scripts and stuff. I think it would make it really easy. It's
nice.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm very happy with it. Does a great job. And then you've got Debian. Once you're done with all that, you've got Debian, which is a very, I think it's probably the most solid version of Linux for this kind of thing. Even Ubuntu is based on Debian. So yes, that was going to be my pick. Even though it's $10 and most people think Linux should be free.
They're like, wait, Linux free?
Yeah, but you're paying for the customization. And what you may also end up installing, and it works very well with it, I think it's also $10 version of X-Window for Windows, which is kind of, I think it's X410 or something like that, that's written to give you access to GUI Linux apps under Microsoft's Windows for Linux, whatever it's called. And the Linux for Windows. Nice thing about that is even though Microsoft doesn't support using GUIs, this works quite well. So that's another $10 down the tubes. But if you really want to run Linux on Windows, it's
free as in beer, Leo.
Free as in beer, not as in money.
Right. That's good.
Anyway,
I'm glad you've tried it.
Yeah, and I really like it. I'm a fan.
I saw the article on ZDNet, and I'm like, you know what? Interesting, but I don't know anything more than what the article said.
I already had Debian installed, but I ran out and put that in there. Very nice.
Cool.
And your that was your enterprise pick of the week.
Yeah, that was the enterprise pick.
Although, really, it's for everybody.
Kind of a developer pick more, right?
And then I would guess it would be time for your code name of the week.
Yes. So I don't know if this is a code name or the final name, but Microsoft is working on a new programming language.
What?
I know.
Just what
the
we
name
need.
Is BOSQ. BOSQUE. What is a BOSQ? I had to look that up.
Star Wars reference?
Oh, I don't know. But when I just did a search to find BOSQ, it says it's a type of a gallery forest habitat found in the floodplains of streams and riverbanks in the southwestern United States.
Oh, that's definitely what they're thinking of.
That's got to be it. I don't know. I don't know why.
There must be another reason they would name a programming language BOSQ.
Yeah.
Maybe like Bosco.
I don't know. BOSQUE.
I hope this one has line numbers. I miss line numbers.
Yeah.
Well, wait till I read you the description because it's not for the everyday person. The BOSQ programming language is designed for writing code that is simple, obvious, easy to reason about for both humans and machines.
Good.
The key design features of the language provide ways to avoid accidental complexity in the development and coding process.
This sounds like Lisp.
Yes, please be like Lisp.
Please be like Lisp.
So there aren't a lot of hints about this. It's a Microsoft Research project at this point. It's on GitHub, so you can find all the code and samples and everything else about it so far on GitHub. And it's been released under the MIT license so that other researchers can work with Microsoft on this language. I found out about it because the Walking Cat put a link up to it. And so, other than that, what is it for?
Good news, everybody. It's yet another C-like language, so enjoy that.
Well, this is a new concept, though, in programming, this so-called regularized.
Right. What does that mean? I saw that, and I didn't know what that meant.
Well, I've never heard that term before, but the way they describe it is exactly the benefits people talk about with functional programming.
Okay.
Which is that you can reason about the code because the code is functional. And accidental complexity, that sounds like
right, Leo.
Function decomposition.
So functional programming, Microsoft has a language called F#.
Yes.
Yep.
So this thing is regularized programming. I'm going to guess it's going to be called R#.
R#? Q# is their quantum programming
language. U#, which will be the name of my book about the R# programming language.
R#.
Excellent. He's already planning this now. Good job.
On the other hand, if you really wanted to promote a programming language, naming it after the Spanish word for forest maybe isn't the best. So I think R# would be better.
You can't see the bosque for the trees.
Yeah.
The fact they talk about it's a language for both humans and machines makes me wonder if it's part of their AI strategy.
What does that mean?
Right.
You know, the research paper talks about moving beyond structured programming.
It does.
Again, that's something that functional programming enthusiasts often talk about.
Yeah. Yep. So we don't know a lot about this. I don't know when we'll hear more, but there it is. There's Bosk. If you hear that name, that's what that is.
So it's not the bounty hunter from Empire Strikes Back? Bosk?
No. Is that his name?
Yeah, but it's spelled differently.
Bosk. Oh.
I know.
That would have been a good guess.
Yeah. Yep. I think he was the lizard looking one.
So
programming language for lizards.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, programmers.
Gecko. Yeah, who knows? I don't know.
Gecko. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, this is interesting. I'm reading his paper about this.
Yeah, there's a research paper.
It derives from a combination of TypeScript, which is also a functional language,
Microsoft.
And ML, which is a really functional language, and Node and JavaScript-inspired semantics. So, yeah, it will look like C, but it does sound like
it's... It looks just like C-sharp or any C-like language.
A nominal type system. I'm not sure what that means. Structural type system. Combination type system. Bosk is, everybody's trying to figure out a way to make languages less error prone and more easy to reason about. And this is seems like a reasonable thing to do. It looks a little bit like a functional language, really.
Anyway,
Bosk.
I thought it was a good pick.
Look for it at a language store near you.
And the Microsoft Store.
The beer of the week.
The beer of the week is a cider this
Ooh,
week.
I love ciders.
Because, you know, it's spring and it feels like time to start thinking about some lighter drinks.
Time to
maybe.
Put your rosé in the freezer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, we did that one episode. So my pick is called Brosé.
This is made for Paul.
Rosé.
Every time I see
rosé
on a menu, I send a picture of it to Andrew Zarian.
Why is it called Brosé? It's a cider rosé made by three bros in the great state of Vermont. Oh, that's their description.
Wow.
Yikes. Just in case, California, you thought you were alone in that one.
Brosé is made by fermenting blueberries with fresh apple cider.
Ooh.
So I have not tried this citizen cider, this particular one, but I will tell you, I've tried a lot of their other citizen ciders and they're all very good. So I have high hopes for the Brosé.
Does it come in a carb-friendly version, Mary Jo?
Carb-friendly? Probably. You can't drink cider, can you? Or can you?
Cider's probably not... Yeah, it's probably not on the list.
Probably not. Sorry.
It's too sweet and delicious.
Yeah, too sweet and delicious. Yeah, I thought, though, a nice spring-like drink, pink, you know, all the things you think about.
I'm so glad it's pronounced rosé.
Rosé, yeah. We got to get Andrew Zarian some of this because he's a bro.
Yes, he drinks rosé.
I think that actually disqualifies you completely from being a bro, but I may be wrong.
It does. If you're a bro drinking a cider, right?
That's no cider, maybe, but rosé. I don't.
A
rosé.
Pink one.
Pink cider. You might want to dye it green or something, just to.
Yeah, although you know this weekend's Easter, so you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Just put it in that Xbox mug. No one will see it.
That's right. Co-fermentation.
Just don't use the straw.
Friends, that's it for Windows Weekly for another week. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. You'll find Mary Jo at her ZDNet blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Read Paul each and every day, as I do. I'm a premium member at Thurrott.com, thurrogood.com. And his books are at leanpub.com, including the Field Guide to Windows 10.
Maybe there'll be a field guide for Credge.
Oh, man. Are you going to do one?
Well, you got to update the field guide to include Credge.
Yeah,
you can have your own Credge guide.
Right.
Dedicated.
Be a short.
I got to get in the ground floor of Credge. You know.
We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 Pacific in the morning, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. If you want to come by and watch or listen, you can do that at our stream, twit.tv/live, twit.tv/live. That has several audio and video streams to choose from. If you're doing that, you should be in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Those are all the people watching live and talking amongst themselves. You can get on-demand versions of the show at our website, twit.tv/ww, or wherever you get your podcasts. In fact, best thing to do would be subscribe so that you get the episode Wednesday afternoon, the minute it's available, and you'll have it for your Thursday morning commute. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.